ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the chairman of the board of the Walt Disney Company, John Pepper Jr.
Thank you. Thank you all very much and good morning. On behalf of the management and the entire board of the Walt Disney Company, I've got the great pleasure of welcoming you all here to our 2011 annual meeting. We're delighted to be with you here in Salt Lake City. I know a number of you have come from different parts of Utah and surrounding areas, and we're grateful that you took the time to travel here and hope very much that you enjoy the proceedings of the meeting. I'm very happy to begin by reporting to you that 2010 was a very good year for your company. Really, well above the average. Excellence in creativity, financially, as you'll hear from Bob, and strategically. I think it can be very proud of what your company has achieved. Under the leadership of our CEO, Bob Iger, Disney's management has successfully navigated, I think, the fastest changing media landscape any of us have ever seen. And as we all know, a difficult global economy, all at the same time delivering very strong shareholder value and, very importantly, a platform for building growth in the future. Now, part of that process included senior management changes in several key businesses of the company. They included our movie studio, ABC Entertainment, and the Interactive Media Group. I can tell you that's a lot of change in a single year, and the fact that Disney was able to move through it while delivering record performance is testimony to the leadership that was involved and to a very good platform of succession planning. One of my favorite parts of being your chairman is that I get, more than most, the opportunity to go around the world and visit our employees and our cast members. Last year, I had the pleasure of visiting with Disney teams in London, in Moscow, in Hong Kong, in Anaheim, in California, and in China. In Beijing, I was able to watch a class being taught in one of our Disney English language learning schools. That's one of our newest businesses in China. What makes this special is that Disney characters and the latest technology are being brought together to create a really engaging learning environment for kids. I was impressed by a lot of things, the content, the technology that's being used, and certainly the quality of the teachers. But what stood out the most for me were the children and how engaged they were and how much fun they were having in their learning. I also visited our park in Hong Kong. There are exciting new attractions there. It's being expanded significantly, and that was second only to the level of service and commitment that I saw from the guests, to our guests from our cast. One of the most encouraging things during the year that I saw is something that you wouldn't or our guests wouldn't really notice, and it's not important they do, but it's something very important to our business, and that's our new business structure in Europe. The company has brought together all the leaders in Europe, our geographic leaders, our product line leaders, and they're now operating in tandem far better than ever before. As the former CEO of a global company, Procter & Gamble, I know how important that is and how difficult it is to achieve. I can tell you that it's adding significant value to your company. Here in the States, I got to experience World of Color at Disney's California Adventure. It's really an amazing light and sound spectacle. It features our most beloved characters and stories. As I was watching this, and I can still remember it, what was going through my mind is only Disney could do this. And it's true. World of Colors is absolutely spectacular, and I would encourage all of you who can to experience it firsthand. You know, no matter where I visit, wherever it is in the world, I've been continually impressed by the passion of Disney's people and their commitment to create an exceptional experience for every man, woman, or child who they meet. I can also tell you that the men and women on your board of directors share that passion and commitment, and it is a personal privilege for me to serve with them and an honor to introduce them now. First, Susan Arnold, retired from Procter & Gamble as the company's vice chairman, as well as the president of all of our global business units. John Bryson is senior advisor to Kohlberg, Kravis, Robertson Company. He's also the retired chairman, president, and CEO of Edison International, one of the country's leading energy providers. John Chen is chairman and CEO of Sybase, a software development company, and a wholly owned subsidiary of SAP. Judy Estrin is CEO of J-Labs, a company focused on advancing innovation in business, government, and nonprofit organizations. Bob Iger, who I'll introduce in a moment, is, of course, our president and our CEO. Steve Jobs is the CEO of Apple and the former chairman of Pixar, which now, blessedly, is part of this company. Fred Langhammer is chairman, global affairs of Estee Lauder. Alan Lewis is president and CEO of Potbelly Sandwich Works. Monica Lozano is publisher and CEO of La Opinion. That's the largest Spanish-language daily newspaper in the United States. Bob Matchalot is a private equity investor and former vice chairman and CFO of the Seagram Company. Sheryl Sandberg is chief operating officer of Facebook. And Orrin Smith served as the president and CEO of Starbucks. I'd like to now ask the directors who are here with us today if you'd please stand and be recognized by the audience. Ladies and gentlemen, the board of the Walt Disney Company. Thank you all very much. Thank you. It's now my honor to welcome to the stage your CEO, Bob Iger. I've worked with Bob for over 5 years. Under his leadership, we all have witnessed, the flowering of creativity in every single part of this business. We've seen a stronger management team come into place, far greater use of technology, and we've seen significant growth of this company in every part of the world. This and much more has been reflected in the outstanding results that you're going to hear about in just a moment. Please welcome our CEO, Bob Iger.
Thank you. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining us here in Salt Lake City. We're certainly delighted to be with you. First, I'd like to say something about John Pepper, and I know I speak for the entire board and all of Disney's senior management team when I say it is truly an honor and a privilege to work with John. His expertise, his insights, his wisdom, his knowledge are very much appreciated and are very much a part of the value equation at the Walt Disney Company, and we love working with him and having him as our chairman. I'd also like to introduce a special person to the company who's in the audience, and that is Roy P. Disney. Roy is the son of Roy E. Disney, a former member of our board and an employee of the company for over 50 years, and the grandson of Roy O. Disney, who was Walt Disney's brother and a co-founder of the company. Roy P., if you'd stand up, please. Thank you. Great to have you, Roy. Before we move on to our business today, I want to take a moment to express our concern and support for the people of Japan. We've all watched the tragic events unfold over the last 2 weeks, and it's still hard to fully grasp the devastation in that country. Japan is an important market and a major base of operations for us, and we were fortunate that all of our employees came through it. But there's no doubt it's affected them and their extended families profoundly. And our thoughts and prayers, as well as the support of the Walt Disney Company, remain with our employees and with the people of Japan. And now I'd like to start this meeting with something that truly captures the essence of who we are and what we do. Thank you. That really is Disney, isn't it? Hundreds of millions of people around the world make us part of their daily lives, giving us the chance to touch their hearts and create memories that become part of their history, part of who they are. And that's really what makes the Walt Disney Company and our portfolio of brands different from everyone else. Disney, Pixar, ABC, ESPN, Marvel are some of the world's best known and most loved brands, and they represent a stunning collection of businesses dedicated to delivering wonderful experiences to people everywhere. And it all starts with our people, the remarkable men and women who work tirelessly to exceed the expectations of our guests and our viewers around the world. I'm often awed by their passion and inspired by their creativity, innovation, and commitment. As you know, for the last 5 years, we focused on three strategic priorities: using new technology to enhance the quality and the reach of our content, growing our businesses in promising international markets, and of course, creating great entertainment. Now, we delivered on all of those priorities in fiscal 2010, but it was an especially strong year for us creatively. We became the first studio in history to release two films in 1 year that earned more than $1 billion each in global box office. Alice in Wonderland drew huge crowds into theaters around the world, and Toy Story 3 not only became the most successful animated film ever, but it earned two Oscars, including one for Best Animated Film, as well as a nomination for Best Picture of the Year. Achievements like these added up to a strong fiscal 2010 performance. For the year, net income increased 20% to $3.96 billion on a 5% rise in revenue to $38 billion. Diluted earnings per share for the year increased 15% to $2.03 from $1.76. And the total return delivered by Disney to shareholders was up nearly 24%, substantially more than the 14% return delivered during the same period by the S&P 500. The performance enabled us to continue to make substantial investment in new business opportunities and to raise our cash dividend for the year by 14% to 40 cents a share. And it was the 55th consecutive year in which we paid a dividend. We've gotten off to a strong start in fiscal 2011 with our animated film Tangled, an artistic and commercial success that also gave us a new princess for our royal court, Rapunzel. And okay, let's hear it for princesses. And we couldn't be more excited about what comes next. Johnny Depp returns as Captain Jack Sparrow in Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides. Now, this time he's in search of the Fountain of Youth in a funny, fast-moving adventure that I believe captures the spirit of the original Pirates movie. It sails into movie theaters, no pun intended, on May 20th. But we're proud to show you a clip of that film today. Enjoy it. That looks pretty good. I think I'll go see it. Our Cars franchise races back into theaters when Cars 2 opens this summer, taking the audience on another hilarious and touching ride with Lightning McQueen and Mater. Cars remains one of our largest and most robust product lines, and we're thrilled by the growth of this now very important franchise. In addition to Cars 2 this year, we're really looking forward to the opening of Cars Land at Disney's California Adventure in 2012. It's the largest new attraction that we've ever created, and it's like nothing you've ever seen before. Here's the trailer for Cars 2. Now, while I'm on the subject of franchises and movies, I want to tell you about what's coming up for some of the world's favorite Marvel superheroes. Last year, Iron Man 2 was a hit with audiences around the world, and we're bringing two more Marvel icons to the screen this summer. And first up is Thor. There are many reasons to love this movie. It's got great story, strong characters, thrilling action, compelling drama, and amazing actors, including Academy Award winners Anthony Hopkins and Natalie Portman. You really have to see it to believe how good it is, which is why I brought you a sneak peek. So here's a look at Marvel's Thor. For those of you who may be slightly confused by the appearance of the Paramount logo on that trailer, when we bought Marvel, Paramount was the studio that distributed Marvel's films. Marvel owns and produces the films, but Paramount distributes them. That's a relationship that's ending this summer, and starting next summer, Disney becomes the exclusive global distributor of all of Marvel's films, and of course, the owner of them as well. Thor, by the way, in theaters May 6th, and you can see why we're really excited about it. Really big film. In July, one of Marvel's most beloved characters, Captain America, comes to life in a live-action feature, And I think it's a great year for Marvel fans. But next year it gets even better when we bring Iron Man, Thor, Captain America, the Hulk, and the Black Widow together in The Avengers. And this combination of iconic characters, incredible star power, and action-packed story makes this one of the most anticipated films of 2012. In the last few years, we've been investing in our parks and resorts, and we're starting to see some amazing results. John earlier mentioned the World of Color, and he's right. It really is something only Disney could do. And as I said, we're looking forward to adding Cars Land to California Adventure next summer. But we're also immensely proud of our latest cruise ship, the Disney Dream. It's the small little ship there on our island in the Bahamas. It's absolutely gorgeous. It's quite amazing. And its use of technology and attention to detail are really something to behold. And everything about the ship is designed to deliver the unparalleled guest experience that only Disney is known for. And looking ahead, we're also doubling the size of Fantasyland at Walt Disney World's Magic Kingdom, adding some new attractions and experiences for the whole family. And then in August, we will welcome our first guests to Aulani, our new resort and vacation club in Hawaii. And then next year, the Disney Dream's sister ship, the Fantasy, will also set sail, offering guests more destinations than ever before. We're expanding Hong Kong Disneyland, and we're close to final approval for Shanghai Disneyland to bring Disney's magic and creativity to the heart of China. With 1.3 billion people and a growing middle class, China is definitely an important part of our global strategy, and we're very excited about these developments. Our television businesses have evolved into creative engines as well, driving opportunity, franchises, and revenue across our entire company. Our ABC Entertainment Group has delivered some of the most watched and the most recorded shows on television here in the U.S., TV shows that are also sold into more than 200 markets worldwide. ABC Family has emerged as the TV brand for millennials, delivering record ratings in this country and also selling original series into markets around the world as well. And of course, Disney Channel also delivered record domestic ratings last year, but we're particularly excited about Disney Channel's expansion into new markets such as Russia and South Korea. And in fact, the Disney Channel is now in 168 countries worldwide. Last month's introduction of Disney Junior, our new multi-platform brand for preschoolers, gives us another way to extend our reach and connect with our youngest fans and their families. And we're starting Disney Junior as a programming block, replacing the Playhouse Disney brand, rolling out to other markets around the world in the coming months, and ultimately evolving it into a standalone 24-hour channel starting in 2012. And then there is ESPN, the worldwide leader in sports. Now, no part of our company has taken greater advantage of new technology to give consumers an incredible experience than ESPN. Marrying cutting-edge technology with unparalleled content has always been a hallmark of ESPN's success. They bring a keen focus to integrating their expert coverage of the NFL, of the NBA, of Major League Baseball, college football, college basketball, golf, tennis, the World Cup, cricket, you name it, they cover it. And as a result, ESPN is stronger than ever, delivering record consumption across platforms while setting many viewership marks across its U.S. television networks. ESPN continues to expand its digital reach into the lives of sports fans everywhere. This is ESPN. I think I saw some Utah sports teams in that video. That is an amazing coincidence. No one does sports like ESPN, and no one does anything quite like Disney. So on behalf of everyone across the Walt Disney Company, I invite you to join the more than 215 million fans who stay connected with us via Disney Facebook pages. Whether you're a fan of our movies, our theme parks, TV shows, ESPN, or all of the above, odds are there is a Facebook page just for you. I'm proud of our performance and what we've achieved, and I'm committed to delivering for our shareholders. And I'm grateful to the thousands of people across our entire company who share that commitment. I'm aware that there are tremendous responsibilities to our guests and shareholders, and that those are accompanied by a responsibility as a corporate citizen. We strongly believe that effective corporate citizenship fundamentally adds to shareholder value and is worth every bit of the time and resources that we put into it. We're guided by three primary principles. The first, act in an ethical manner and consider the consequences of our actions. Second, champion the happiness and well-being of kids and their families. I think I hear one of those in the audience today. Inspire kids and parents, employees and communities to make a positive change in the world. You'll see these principles at work in a variety of initiatives, from our campaign to connect our characters with healthy food and lifestyle choices, to public service initiatives like Disney Channel's Friends for Change campaign. And you can learn more about what we're doing to build on Disney's long tradition of good corporate citizenship by reading our corporate citizenship report, which is now available online. It really is an honor for me to lead this organization. I'm grateful for the opportunity, thankful for your support, and committed to doing our best to exceed your expectations. Now, John Pepper is ready to take the stage to conduct the business portion of this meeting, but before he comes back up here, I have one more surprise for you. I brought you something special from our friends at Pixar, the people who are defining what's possible and raising the standard of potential of animation across our company and, in fact, to infinity and beyond. This is something no one else is going to see until Cars 2 opens this summer, so I'm very proud to present the world's first Toy Story tune, Hawaiian Vacation. Enjoy.
I think it would be hard to imagine 10 minutes of film filled with more creativity and humor than that. I don't know how many of you have been on Soarin', but my reaction to this film, which I just saw for the first time yesterday, is very much like Soarin'. That is, I want to go through that thing four or five times in a row, especially if I can avoid waiting 60 minutes. Something, by the way, that's being worked on very creatively as I speak within the company, how to make that type of time more enjoyable. Well, it's now my task to bring us back to Earth, and we'll be turning to the formal business before the meeting today. I want to first cover a few administrative matters. Today's meeting has been duly called and is being conducted in conformity with the laws of Delaware and the company's charter and bylaws. The notice of the meeting and proxy materials describing the meeting's business have been duly sent or made available to all of the company's shareholders. The polls opened at 9 o'clock this morning, and they're going to close at the end of our business portion of this meeting. If you haven't yet voted, or if you want to change your vote, you may do so at any time prior to the closing of the polls. Ballots for this purpose are available at the registration tables just outside the doors in which you came in. Copies of the rules of the meeting have been made available at the same location. I'd like to ask for all of your cooperation in respecting the rules, including the speaking time limits, and assisting us in conducting orderly business. The company has retained Broadridge Investor Communications Solutions as the inspector of election for today's meeting. Now, we've got six items on the agenda today: the election of 13 directors that are named in the proxy statement, ratification of the appointment of our registered public accountants, approval of the 2011 stock incentive plan. We have an advisory vote on executive compensation and a related advisory vote on the frequency of advisory votes on executive compensation. And finally, we have consideration of a shareholder proposal, if presented, on performance tests for restricted stock units. Now, I'm going to introduce each of these matters, and I will give the proponent of the shareholder proposal the opportunity to present its proposal, and then I'm going to open up the opportunity for all of you present to address those six resolutions. Once we've completed our consideration of these items, the polls will close and we'll get a preliminary report on the results from the Inspector of Election. And that'll conclude the business portion of the meeting. At the end of the business portion, we'll be opening it up to a general question and answer period, and following that, we'll adjourn. I'd now like to introduce our Inspector of Election, Peter Deskovich. He is a representative of Broadridge, and I'm going to ask Peter to give us a report on the number of outstanding shares present today and voting.
Thank you. My name is Peter Deskovich, a representative of Broadridge Investor Communication Solutions, acting here today as Inspector of Election for this meeting. As of the close of business on January 24, 2011, the record date for this meeting, there were 1,898,305,774 shares of common stock outstanding, each of which is entitled to one vote. There are at least 1,633,187,683 shares of common stock represented by proxy at this meeting, representing at least 86% of the total number of shares entitled to vote.
Thank you, sir. Based on the report that we've just heard, I rule that a quorum is present and that this meeting is qualified to proceed with the business before us. The first proposal is the election of 13 members of the Board of Directors. Each director holds office for a term of 1 year. Those nominated for election at this meeting are Susan Arnold, John Bryson, John Chen, Judy Estrin, Bob Iger, Steve Jobs, Fred Langhammer, Alwyn Lewis, Monica Lozano, Bob Matchalot, myself, Sheryl Sandberg, and Orrin Smith. As you all know, the board has recommended a vote for the election of all of the nominees. The next proposal is ratification of the appointment of PricewaterhouseCoopers LLP as the company's independent registered accountants for the current fiscal year, as recommended by the Audit Committee of the board. Services provided by Pricewaterhouse to the company include examination of the company's financial statements and review of its reports and other filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission. Ryan Cullinan and Wayne Jackson, representatives of Pricewaterhouse, are here with us today to respond to any questions that might arise. Your board has recommended a vote for the ratification of the appointment of Pricewaterhouse as the company's independent registered accountants for 2011. Now, the next proposal is approval of the 2011 Stock Incentive Plan. The terms of this plan are substantially similar to the terms of our current 2005 Stock Incentive Plan, with the changes that are existing described in the proxy statement. In connection with the approval of the 2011 plan, we are proposing to increase the total number of shares available for issuance under this and prior plans by 64 million shares to a total of about 134 million shares. The next proposal is the advisory vote on executive compensation. As required by a recently enacted law, we are seeking advisory shareholder approval of the compensation of our named executive officers. We believe that the design of our compensation program and the compensation awarded under it creates an appropriate relationship between performance and compensation, and the board has recommended a vote for this proposal. Although this vote is non-binding, the Board of Directors and the Compensation Committee will review the voting results in connection with their ongoing evaluation of the company's compensation program. The next proposal is the advisory vote on the frequency of votes on executive compensation. Recently enacted rules here also require us to seek shareholders' views on whether the advisory vote on executive compensation should be held every 1, 2, or 3 years. The board believes that the most strongly held views on this question do favor an annual advisory vote and has therefore recommended a vote for holding such votes every year. The final proposal before us is the shareholder proposal presented by Unite Here. The full text of this proposal is set forth in the proxy statement. I understand that Andy Lee, a representative of the shareholder, is here to present this proposal, and I would like to invite him to do so. I'd like to ask Mr. Lee to limit the presentation to 5 minutes at most. Mr. Lee, are you here?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you, Chairman Pepper, for allowing me the chance to address the group of investors here. My name is Andy Lee. I'm here representing Unite Here, which is a shareholder in the company. Unite Here also represents over 20,000 Disney employees in the U.S., some of whom are also shareholders in their own right. Finally, Unite Here is an active member of the Council of Institutional Investors, which is a coalition of corporate, public, and union pension funds that advocates good governance through shareholder activism and which collectively has $3 trillion in assets under management. On behalf of Unite Here, I urge my fellow shareholders to support our shareholder resolution, which is discussed in pages 74 through 76 of your proxy statement. Specifically, our resolution reads as follows. Resolved that shareholders recommend that the company's compensation committee adopt a policy to only use one test to assess performance in determining eligibility for awards of stock in the long-term incentive plan for senior executives, rather than allowing retests that increase the likelihood of executives receiving these awards. While the language sounds a little bit technical, its purpose is actually very simple: to do away with a practice that we believe de-emphasizes the crucial link between compensation and performance that is a hallmark of good corporate governance. Specifically, our proposal recommends a policy of only allowing executives to take one performance-based test to determine eligibility for stock awards in the long-term incentive plan, rather than being allowed to take multiple tests. We believe that such a practice de-links executive compensation from company performance because it allows executives multiple opportunities under different criteria to receive these awards and de-emphasizes company performance as a factor in receiving them. I also want to note that we have received the support of Institutional Shareholder Services, or ISS. ISS is a widely respected authority on governance issues, as well as the leading proxy voting firm in the U.S. Finally, I want to address management's statement in opposition to our resolution, in which they state that, quote, the proposal's restriction to a single measure for performance tests would inappropriately limit the compensation committee's ability to craft a compensation program that appropriately incentivizes performance that drives long-term shareholder value. The board believes that the appropriate criteria for a performance test sometimes can and should be based on more than one measure of performance or based on measurements at more than one time. Our resolution does not prohibit the scenarios raised by management. It only applies to the practice of awarding stock to executives who fail the first test applied to company performance, but nonetheless are awarded stock when a different performance test is used. The resolution allows performance tests that, number one, include more than one measure of performance, number two, apply such measurements over different periods of time, and number three, grant stock options in portions over time. We're gratified that ISS agrees with our position, stating in its report issued last month that, quote, it does not appear that this proposal would limit the company's ability to create an incentive package around multiple performance criteria. A well-composed incentive plan may include multiple performance criteria, each with a specific target that must be met before awards become payable and a specific weight percentage towards the overall target award. This proposal merely limits the use of a design that features fallback metrics or resetting of performance periods, commonly known as retesting. Based on analysis of the company's ongoing long-term incentive approach and the specifics of the shareholder resolution, ISS recommends that shareholders vote for this proposal. We urge our fellow shareholders to follow the recommendation of ISS and to vote yes on this proposal. In conclusion, we believe this resolution, if passed, will help improve our company by better linking executive compensation to the company's performance and therefore aligning the interests of top executives with ours as shareholders. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Thank you very much. I just say at the outset, this issue has received great scrutiny from the Compensation Committee and management and the entire board. And we have designed, as you'd expect, the current performance test to reflect performance over a three-year period using two measures that we believe in combination are more appropriate measures of long-term shareholder value growth. The proponent has stated that its proposal would not prohibit that current test. It might, however, limit what we believe to be the best performance test design for the future. We believe it important that the Compensation Committee retain the flexibility to craft a compensation program that incents performance that drives long-term shareholder value, and to be able to modify performance test designs to that end. because we believe that it would unduly interfere with the exercise of that flexibility as we go ahead. The board recommends that you vote against this proposal. Now, at this point, I'm going to be opening the floor to discussion of any of the proposals of the six that we've talked and been presented. If you'd like to address any one of them, I would ask that you proceed to a microphone and wait to be recognized. When you're recognized, please state your name, tell us where you're from, and identify which proposal you wish to address, and then proceed with your remarks. Again, I'd like to ask your remarks be limited to 2 minutes in order to give everybody a chance to be heard. I want to emphasize that we're going to have a general question and answer session following this discussion now of those six proposals. So I would like to ask that remarks at this point of the meeting be limited to the proposals that have been presented. And then we'll be coming back, as I say, after I report the results, to open the floor to more general questions and answers. Let me begin at, is there anything at 4 or 2? No? Okay, well, seeing no questions on those proposals, let me move on and note that this really concludes consideration of all the items to be presented at the meeting, and the polls will now close. Again, I'd like to ask the Inspector of Election to give us his report based on proxies received by the opening of the polls at today's meetings. Ballots and proxies handed in during the meeting, as I said, will be tabulated later by the inspector, and they'll be included in the final results that will be reported and be filed with the SEC next week. Inspector, may we have your preliminary report, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For item one, the election of directors, we have received proxies or votes for a total of at least 1,210,677,937 shares for each director. Four votes represented at least 85% of the votes cast for each director. For item two, ratification of the appointment of PricewaterhouseCoopers LLP, we have received proxies or votes for a total of 1,610,831,699 shares on this proposal. Votes in favor of this proposal represented approximately 98% of the votes represented at the meeting and entitled to vote on this proposal. For item three, approval of the 2011 Stock Incentive Plan, we have received proxies for 1,045,002,895 shares voting in favor of the plan, representing approximately 73% of the shares represented at the meeting and entitled to vote. The holders of 372,984,289 shares have voted against the plan. The holders of 5,229,670 shares have abstained. For item four, approval of the advisory vote on executive compensation, we have received proxies for 1,093,191,334 shares voting to approve, representing approximately 76% of the shares outstanding on the record date. The holders of 323,482,570 shares have voted against approval. The holders of 6,542,950 shares have abstained. For item number five, the advisory vote on the frequency of advisory votes on executive compensation, 1,162,722,107 shares have voted for an annual advisory vote on executive compensation, representing approximately 81% of shares represented at the meeting and entitled to vote. The holders of 228,083,200 shares voted for a triennial vote. 28,338,700 shares voted for a biennial vote, and 4,072,844 shares abstained. For item six, approval of a shareholder proposal relating to performance tests for restricted stock units, we have received proxies for 415,989,313 shares voting in favor of the proposal, representing approximately 29% of shares represented at the meeting and entitled to vote. The holders of 998,414,940 shares have voted against the proposal. The holders of 8,812,601 shares have abstained. That concludes my report, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Well, based on that report and subject to the final confirmation of voting results by the Inspector of Election, I declare that all the nominees for election to the board have been duly elected, that the appointment of Price Waterhouse has been duly ratified, that the 2011 Stock Incentive Plan is approved, and that the shareholder proposal is not approved. I'd also note that a majority of votes present and eligible to vote approved the advisory proposal on executive compensation and an annual advisory vote on executive compensation. That concludes the business portion of the meeting. Now, at this point, what I'd like to do is invite Bob to rejoin me, along with Jay Rasullo. Jay is the Senior Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer of the company, and he'll also be joined by Alan Braverman. Alan is Senior Executive Vice President, General Counsel, and Secretary of the company. We're all here so that we can open the floor to your questions. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please proceed to one of the microphones. Wait to be recognized. When you are recognized, again, please state your name, where you're from, and then proceed with your question. Once again, I'd please ask you to keep your questions to no more than 2 minutes in order to give everybody a chance to be heard on a full range of topics, and that you not raise or repeat topics that have already been raised. I'd also ask that speakers refrain from raising purely personal matters or grievances, since it's really not fair to make everybody sit through matters of personal concern. Okay, with that, we'll go ahead and we'll start with number four.
Hi, my name is David Randall from St. Petersburg, Florida, where I work with the International Ocean Institute Waves of Change Campaign and the United Nations URI Global Healing Initiative. I've been a longtime supporter of Disney, going my first visit to Disneyland within 2 weeks after it opened, where I actually got to meet Walt Disney and had my high school graduation there. It's as part of growing up in Southern California, and had part of my honeymoon there. So Disney has lots of fond, good memories. But I want to say a recent fond memory for me is the positive action that Walt Disney Company is taking in relationship to the environment. In the last 2 years, my colleagues and friends, Dr. Noel Brown, former director of the UN Environment Program, and Dr. Reese Halder, award-winning conservation biologist who oversees 165 scientists around the world, the three of us have had an opportunity to collaborate and work with Disney cast members like Beth Stevens, John Lenhart, Jackie Ogden, and we have concluded that if there's any hope in the world for the environmental crises turning around, it's going to be through leadership like companies like Walt Disney. Also noted the recent Newsweek ratings where Walt Disney received a 97.92 rating on environmental performance, which places it 11th in all the 500 U.S. largest corporations and 11th in the top 100 corporations in the world. Where it falls short, though, is telling the story to the rest of the world, where it only receives ratings in the 40s. So my question is, will Disney commit to telling its story better and taking stronger leadership and helping other corporations achieve what Disney isn't able to obtain and its goals? Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. First of all, I appreciate your remarks. As I stated in my remarks on our corporate social responsibility, our care for the environment is certainly at the top of our list in terms of how we position ourselves as a citizen of the world. And our support of the environment is really in two main directions. One, very conscious of our impact on the world, our consumption, how we deal with waste, our carbon footprint, for instance, the vehicles that we use, you name it. We're really working hard to reduce in positive ways the impact that we have from a negative perspective on the environment. In addition, we're trying to use our rather significant reach, not just in the U.S., but globally, to influence people in a very positive way, to get kids and their families much more conscious about this as a subject. And there are certainly examples of this across our Disney channels around the world. We release every year a film on Earth Day. Oceans was our last one. This year we have African Cats, which is coming out in April, which is also a very good film. We've got a pretty significant website presence. And I guess there are probably better ways that we could communicate either what we're doing or continue to attempt to influence. I will say, hearing from you that we're 11th you immediately got my competitive juices flowing. I'd like to be in the top 10 next year. So however we get there, I appreciate your not only your compliments, but your advice on it. We will work on that.
Thank you. Number two.
I am Deacon Guggenheim, grade 3. I'm just wondering, why are you changing California Adventure's entrance?
Deacon, thank you. We took a look at all of California Adventure, about 3 or 4 years ago, and felt that there were a fair amount of changes that were needed to make it a little bit more warm and inviting or hospitable. I don't know whether you've learned that word in third grade vocabulary yet, but it's a good word to know. And to just generally make it more enjoyable. And so not only are we adding Cars Land, but this coming year we're adding a Little Mermaid attraction. We opened World of Color, which we mentioned earlier. And then we're redoing the entire entrance of California Adventure because we felt that it was a little bit cold and a little bit it wasn't Disney enough. And so it's being designed to look like the California that Walt and his brother Roy first saw when they visited, where they decided to move to California back in the 1920s. It'll have a red car, which is a trolley car, a new restaurant, a great theater, and we're actually very excited about that. I don't know whether you raise this because you like the current entrance or not, but if you do, we're sorry. We actually think that the new one's going to be even better. We invite you to come see it. Thank you.
Number one, please.
Hi, my name is Corey, and I'm a shareholder from Arizona. And my question is, how do you decide if a movie's going to have a sequel or not? I can't wait until I get to see Cars 2.
Well, we usually let the creators of the films decide. And when they have a really good idea for a sequel, then we give them the necessary support to allow them to make it. So John Lasseter, who was the director of Cars 2 and directed Cars 1, and the great people at Pixar, had a great idea for a second movie, and that's why you're going to get a chance to see it this summer. Pirates is another example. Pirates 4 coming out this year. Toy Story 3 was another good example of that. But we usually leave it to the great creators at the Walt Disney Company to come up with good ideas. And when they've got one, then we go ahead and we make the sequel. Thank you very much. We hope you enjoy Cars.
Number three, please.
Hello. Hello, my name is Russell Maitland, and I've been a bellman at the Disneyland Hotel for the past 12 years, and I'm also a shareholder. In fact, I was here and addressed you last year at the meeting in San Antonio. And I wanted to come here again to address to the top leadership of Disney, to Mr. Pepper, Mr. Iger, and the board, to urge Disney to get involved and help resolve the labor dispute going on in Anaheim, California, between the workers represented by Unite Here Local 11 and the Walt Disney Company. This dispute is now entering its fourth year. As you may know, management made a new contract proposal last month, and we are preparing a counteroffer. Although the new proposal has added a little more money, it does not address some of the main issues that members such as myself and my coworkers are concerned about, such as continued demands for drastic health care takeaways. We urge management to keep this in mind when they receive our counteroffer. We do not believe we are being unreasonable by refusing to accept terms that would cause many of my coworkers, including myself, to lose our health care. I realize that Disney has attempted to portray us as obstinate by noting that we are the only union out of 31 unions in Disneyland that have not settled a contract and gone to Disney's health care plan. What I would say to that is that members of the other 31 unions generally make wages significantly higher than those of many members of my union, which represents workers such as housekeepers, dishwashers, and janitors, and as members who make less than $9 per hour. Our union in the past negotiations, as you know, has forgone wage increases in exchange for maintaining affordable health care. And it may be the case that the other 30 unions have settled because many of their members make relatively higher wages, which enable them to afford the increased health care premiums. Many of our members are not in this situation, and Disney's proposed takeaways would make health care impossible for them to afford, including myself. Every other union hotel in Orange County already does what we're asking of Disney. Disney also makes a lot more money than these hotels. so it's inconceivable that Disney could not agree to keep affordable health care. I would prefer not to have to travel to next year's meeting under these pretenses, but we will do obviously whatever it takes. But I'm here because this may be the only place where all of you, the top leadership of Disney, meet in one place and can make these decisions. Will you as a board be discussing the labor issue in Anaheim, or have you done so already? And if so, have you come to any conclusions or decisions about how to settle it? When I was here last year, you stated that you could not discuss the details of the dispute since both sides were in federal mediation. Since we are no longer in mediation, I hope that you will be able to share your thoughts and dispute. And one closing remark, as I noted in the meeting, as presented under the key leadership essentials, I believe, the first one was how to conduct yourself in an ethical manner. And we are, I think, in a recovering economy, but as you can see through the reports here, the company is doing quite well. And in these times when there's increased compensation going to the top of the executive leadership, how can we ethically ignore the bottom and propose healthcare takeaways? So I would appreciate, obviously, since we're no longer in mediation, if you could share your concerns with that as well as with the rest of the shareholders. And thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much. And thank you for traveling and being committed to what you do like you are. I'm going to let Mr. Iger Bobble talk to where the company and the management is. I would want to say to you that as a matter of the board involvement, it's been very close. I don't think there's been more than one or two meetings in the last couple of years where we have not been briefed on this, understood the union's position, understood what discussions are underway. So the board has been very involved in this with management. They've kept us fully briefed. We brought our best judgment to bear in terms of what the management is proposing. We've agreed with it. We know there's a new proposal, the details of which I do not know, that's now under consideration. I'm sure that the management is looking forward to hearing what that response will be. With that, let me turn it over to Bob.
Thank you, John. I'll also say thank you for raising this, and I appreciate the manner in which it was raised. I also appreciate the job you do and the job your fellow co-workers do. We know that the magic, as we refer to it, often starts with the people who first greet our guests when they visit our hotels or interact with them when they stay at our hotels. And I fully respect the importance of that and the importance of yourself and your fellow co-workers to the company. If I could put a few things in perspective that you said. First of all, you were accurate in saying that there are 31 unions representing a variety of different employees at Disneyland, and 30 of them have already agreed to terms that include a health care package that's consistent with what we offer to employees across the company. And your union is, as you cited, the only one that has not been able to do that. I have personally gotten involved in this, not only to understand the details, but to see to it that we were at least listening to the concerns of the union and trying to be responsive. And in fact, the counterproposal that was made that you referenced a few weeks ago was something that met with my approval. And I am at least glad to hear that it's being addressed by the union, because we've not heard back from them since we made the proposal. In terms of your comment about either depriving you of health care or making it unaffordable, I'd like to put that in perspective as well. Roughly 99% of all large companies in the United States offer health care coverage that requires its employees to defray some of the cost. And in Disney's case, we ask employees to defray approximately 25% of the cost. And we have about 25,000 employees that are in like jobs at like compensation levels across our Parks and Resorts unit in Anaheim and in Orlando that are already covered by this policy and, in fact, are contributing to the cost of health care, which we know, because expenses have risen, has gotten more challenging for employers and for employees alike. The plan that we have offered is one that we believe is generous for a few reasons. First of all, when we looked at other union members and other employees in the hospitality and the entertainment space, we determined that the proposal that we made to you just a few weeks ago was about 20% better in terms of lower cost to the employee than what was being offered in the hospitality and the entertainment sector in the region. In addition, we created the flexibility for employees to choose one of seven different plans. So the employee gets to choose what plan and what the cost is of that plan. The union is seeking a plan that is 100% covered by the company, which is not consistent with how we treat other employees and not consistent with what we've seen in American business or in the business sector. So we just didn't feel that that was a proposal that was right for us to accept. I also want to say that the plan that we offered is more generous in terms of the type of benefits. We offer sick days, we offer dental and vision coverage, for instance, and to our knowledge, the union plan does not offer that. And then lastly, we offered the union the flexibility of either taking one of our plans or staying with the union plan. And if the employee chooses to take one of our plans, we defray the cost of that over the next 2 years, $5,000 per person. So we thought we had taken a big step, at least in the direction of trying to resolve this matter, because we certainly prefer a contract versus what we've been going through for the past number of years. And we worked really hard at crafting something that we thought was not only fair, but consistent with what we generally have seen across businesses and certainly at the company.
Point out, one thing that you failed to address is that of those other 30 unions, we are the only ones that have actually given up raises in response to maintain that health care plan that you so provided. Those raises have accrued over $2.55, actually more than that, over the life of those contracts. And actually, based on our average wages, that would pretty much between our workers would go between 20 to 40% of their actual salary. So we are actually giving up. We are paying for our health care right now through the wages that we did not receive. And, I mean, right now with your current proposal, that $2.55 that we've given up disappears. I don't know if Pixie Dust gets it or what, but...
Well, I know that you haven't received...
I'd like you to address that. Please.
I know that you haven't received wage increases while the contract has not been... while we haven't
that
resolved
also,
this.
Yeah.
I am not familiar with what the wage situation was prior to the expiration of the last contract. I'll take a look at that. But, again, it's my belief after the information was presented to me and I studied it carefully and discussed it very carefully, that the proposal that we put forward is not only consistent with how we treat the rest of the company, but is quite consistent with how roughly 25,000 employees at the company in similar jobs have already accepted. But I will take a look at that.
Just to reemphasize, we've given up money to keep that health insurance. So obviously, in fairness, that money should be returned to the workers somehow.
Well, again, we have a proposal that would pay the members of the union $5,000 over the next 2 years to help defray the cost of basically contributing to the health care plan.
Just to ensure you, the management has been very not forthcoming with information on that, and actually there's been a lot of questions as to who would receive that because we have not gotten anything from management in response to that, just that there might be up to $5,000.
All right. Well, I'll look into that as well.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Number four, please.
Thank you. My question deals with the spirit of the Walt Disney Company. My name is Michael Filotico. I'm here with my brother. We have both been shareholders in this company since 1965. 1965. We drove up from Los Angeles to attend this meeting. Unlike a majority of the people in this room and unlike a majority of the board of directors, and I suspect unlike all of the board of directors, my brother and I actually saw the Disney brothers in the flesh, both Walt Disney and Roy O. Disney, in person. It was February 1966, and the shareholders' meeting was held at the Burbank Studios. Now, Walt did not actually attend the meeting itself, but while we were waiting for the auditorium doors to open, who should turn the corner on Mickey Mouse Avenue and Dopey Drive but the Disney brothers in the flesh, both Walt Disney and Roy O. Disney. They posed for photographs, and Walt signed autographs. As a boy, I was awestruck to be in the presence of the great Walt Disney. I remember Roy chaired the meeting, Roy O. Disney, and Roy joked, "I can't believe we got 300 people to come to the shareholder meeting. We couldn't get anyone to come when we owed Bank of America all that money." The Disney brothers had class. I think we can all agree they had class. They had a real spirit back then. Back then, all those attending the meeting got free tickets to Disneyland, and not just free tickets, but a free parking pass, too. You didn't even have to pay for parking. Now, Mr. Pepper, this is not a personal question, because I would like you to reinstate that policy of free tickets to Disneyland for all shareholders who attend the meeting. But, thank you. But in this sense, it is a personal question, because I would like you to start with me and my brother. I'm asking you personally and directly, Mr. Iger, Mr. Pepper, Before you reflexively answer, ask yourselves, what would Walt Disney say if he were alive? Well, you know what he'd say, Walt would say, but of course, I'm embarrassed you had to ask. We used to give them out to everyone who attended the meeting. I don't know when we stopped and became so chintzy. I think it's even more than that. I think Walt would say, this is not a bank. This is the Walt Disney Company. I think he'd be shocked that there were metal detectors and pat-downs to get into the stockholders' meeting. The stockholders' meeting used to be a joyful and pleasant experience. I think they would want to bring back that kind of experience, and they would say to these two brothers, give these two brothers passes to Disneyland. It's a trifle. And it would be part of the spirit of Disney. I have in my hand a self-addressed stamped envelope. I'll hand it to the attendant. Just put the tickets in the envelope and mail it to me. Right? So how about it? Two tickets for the brothers to Disneyland. I conclude by saying to you, Mr. Iger, to you, Mr. Pepper, that's what Walt would do because that's what Walt Disney did.
All right. Get me your envelope. I'm not going to tell you what's in it.
I actually think that provided that the SEC doesn't have an issue with this, we'll give a free pass to Disneyland to anybody who came, any shareholder who came to this meeting today.
Yeah. How about that?
There you go.
There you go.
I don't know what I couldn't reach Walt to ask him. Yeah. But I think you're right. I think you're right about your instinct. He would have said he would have done the same thing.
Is it Philotico?
I have no idea how we're going to capture all this information, but we'll figure that out
too.
Yeah,
Mr. Philotico, you did a good deed here today.
Es un nombre exótico, Philotico.
Philotico. Okay, you did a good deed. It really shows never pays to ask. Never pays to ask.
By the way, one
of the joys of being on this board, you can't imagine, or maybe you can, the number of people once they heard I was on this board are up giving me pictures of their kids who should be in movies, scripts that should be made into movies, and yes, indeed, free tickets to Disneyland.
You know, we used to do this. And he's right, but I think we stopped it sometime in the early 90s, or mid-90s. We used to have the meeting in Anaheim, and we ended up with about 10,000 people, and it was getting pretty expensive, and a little unwieldy. So we decided to move the meeting from city to city because we have shareholders all over the country. A number of shareholders live right here in Salt Lake, and we have businesses all over. Yeah. So. I don't know whether this is going to be a tradition or not. I have a feeling I created a precedent that
if the word had been out, all those seats would have been filled back there.
I think there are a lot of people streaming in.
Because people are sending out tweets as we speak. All right. Here we go. Number two. That's it for the freebies, by the way.
Hello, my name is Jeremy Marks. I'm shareholder of the company. I'm from here locally, Salt Lake City, Utah. Bob, 2 years ago, you were influential in the creation of D23 community for the fans of the company. And it's been tremendous success for the last few years. I've been able to attend quite a few of the events they've done. But I'm wondering what might be coming up in the future that you might have planned for them.
It was actually at an annual meeting when a shareholder got up, like yourself, and suggested that we create opportunities or do things for our most ardent fans and supporters. And when we went back to Burbank and kicked it around, we gave birth to D23, which for those of you who may not be aware, it's essentially a club or an organization of sorts that you pay a nominal fee, and with that you get a variety of different benefits, including a magazine that I think we're making available to people here today. There's a D23 booth, I believe, somewhere here, and we stage events both on properties that we own and in places around the country. In fact, there's an event for D23 members from Salt Lake. Is it later today, Sanya? Later today at the Disney Store. You don't have to buy anything at the Disney Store to go to this event. You just have to be a member of D23. We also have a big D23 event that we're holding in Anaheim on August 20th, I think, or August 19th or 20th or 21st. this summer. We did that 2 summers ago. It was a great success. We showed previews of films. We had a variety of different Disney stars, musical performances, a look into a variety of different developments at our theme parks, etc. And this has become something that we're going to continue to support. As I said, there are a number of events, and there's a schedule of them, I think, in one of those magazines. But we appreciate the support.
Thank you.
Number three.
My name is Matthew Watson, and I am a shareholder, and I'm in the fourth grade. And my question is Pixar now focusing on sequels to existing movies, or are there new movies in the works?
The only sequel that they're working on right now is, I have to remember whether we've announced this. We announced that, right? We did. Sure? Okay. Is a sequel to Monsters. Monsters, Inc., which is coming out in a few years. Right now, it's the only, and Cars 2, of course, which is coming out this summer. And those are the only sequels that we've announced we're working on. And there are a number of other films in the works that are original in nature, and I would imagine over the years you'll see a few more sequels and a lot more original films as well. But no further announcements on that. Thank you.
Number two, please.
Hello, my name is Tom Bray. I'm a been a bellman at the Disneyland Hotel for 23 years and also been a shareholder for about 12. I was also at the shareholders meeting last year in San Antonio. When I was there, we were in the middle of a severe economic downturn. Now it seems like the recovery has begun. Disney emerged from this period a healthy company, and management did play a role in this. However, I believe that Disney's success is also heavily due to the hard work of its employees. Mr. Pepper, as you noted during a 2008 meeting in Albuquerque, and I'll quote, "The success of our company rests more than anything else on the commitment of our more than 137,000 employees and cast members worldwide who work tirelessly to create special memories and experiences for our guests every day. And without them, there would be no Disney difference." But how have both groups, management and cast members, been rewarded for helping Disney succeed during the last 2 years? While top executives have seen major increases in their compensation in 2010, Disneyland hotel workers continue to face loss of their family health care. In this context, it is appropriate that so much of this annual meeting has been devoted to issues of executive compensation, because Disney is an example of the huge disparity between CEO and employee pay. A Disneyland hotel housekeeper currently makes less than $21,000 per year, while Mr. Iger made over $28 million last year, meaning that this compensation was 1,333 times the housekeeper's pay. Even more outrageous is that in 2010, Disney's named top executive officers received an average of 27% increase in total compensation and a 35% increase in cash compensation. Even as Disney demanded that employees who make less than $9 an hour give up affordable family health care and sought the ability to turn many full-time positions at the hotels into part-time, casual jobs without benefits. The increases in compensation also clearly demonstrate that Disney has enough money to continue offering Disneyland Hotel employees affordable health care. The top three named executive officers receive a combined increase of $8.4 million in compensation from 2009 to 2010. Mr. Iger's compensation alone increased by almost $7 million in this period. If he were to allocate that money to be used for Disneyland hotel members' health costs, I believe that it would go a long way to settling the issues at the Disneyland Hotel. Do you think it is right that top Disney executives got an average of 27% increase in compensation last year while we continue to face the loss of our health care benefits? And if I could just add one more thing to what Mr. Iger said, I'm actually on the board of trustees for the Unite Here Health and Welfare Fund, and we actually do provide dental and vision as part of our package as well, too. Thank you.
Well, let me address the point on the compensation. I think on the whole matter of the health care and the union contract, we I'd be repeating what Bob had said, and he may want to come back to that. But the issue of executive compensation is a hot topic in this country, hotter today than probably ever. And you've related some numbers here that are probably more or less correct. I can't speak for the ones in the park. I just make a number of points here. First of all, this whole subject receives enormous scrutiny from the board, from the compensation committee. There are very few things other than perhaps safety in our parks today in the long term, maybe strategy, that even approach the scrutiny that the subject of compensation receives in this company today, and that's as it should be. Let me also reinforce the point I made that you cited in 2008 and that Bob has made today. Everybody counts in this company, and the people who are there greeting the guests you probably represent are vital to this company, and we must be doing the right thing by them. The issue of compensation gets down, as you all would realize, to getting the balance between what is needed to recruit and retain and reward as appropriate the very top leadership that can be found in any business like ours in the world. That's what we've got to do, and we've got to balance it with responsible use of shareholder money. This is a very competitive industry. We happen to have in this company, not just in my view, but most views, the finest CEO leading any company of this type in the world. I do not say that lightly. I do not say that lightly or without a great deal of experience outside of this company as well, having observed strong executives. I would emphasize that 90% of Bob's salary comes based on the performance of the company. 10% would basically be there even if the year wasn't all we wanted it to be. But 90% is based on how our shares do and how we do performing against very clear financial metrics, the details of which I won't take you all through, but they are basically what you'd expect: operating income, return on investment capital. You've seen what is being achieved here in the company today, and you'll draw your own judgment on it. But the financial performance that we've had here, not over just the past year, but over the past five and a half years that Bob has been the CEO, has in anybody's book been really outstanding. Average shareholder growth over the last 5 years in this company has been four times the S&P level of growth. It's been almost 13% per year in a tough economic environment compared to 3% in the S&P. But if that's all it was, this compensation would not be what we would be extending to this CEO. It's the foundational changes that have occurred in this company, in the culture of the company, in the management of the company, in the creativity, in acquisitions like Pixar, which I can tell you would not have happened if Bob Iger weren't the CEO of this company. We would not be the owners of Pixar today. I really believe that. The relationship between Steve Jobs and Bob Iger was fundamental to bringing it together. And not only bringing it together, but allowing that culture of creativity to thrive. This is not an easy subject. It's one we bring a great attention to and will continue to, but we think we're in the right place, and not just with Bob, but by the other executives who would be included in that top group. All I can say to you is we have a compensation committee led by Fred Langhammer, who is devoted to this subject. We will do our very best to do what is right there. And in terms of the contract for these men and women who have gone without a wage increase, and that pains me, I just hope that we can get to a resolution of that within the next year. And I hope what the company has now offered you'll respond to, and I hope we'll work our way through it. That's what I've got to say on this subject. Thank you.
Thank you.
Number three.
Orm, Utah, and you alluded earlier to,
Take your time.
You alluded earlier to making our time more enjoyable in line while we're waiting for rides, and I've noticed that when our last trip to Magic Kingdom, the Winnie the Pooh ride has a lot of interactive things, and I also saw a clip from where the Haunted Mansion at the Magic Kingdom also had installed some fun, whimsical things to do while you're in line. Do you know of any other things that are in the works that you could tell us about?
That's a great question. Thank you.
Yeah, the answer is we know a lot, but we can't tell you about them yet. But clearly we're focused on making the experience for all of those people who visit our parks even better than it is today, although guest research suggests that it's right up there. It's really good. But we think that we can take steps to not only shorten lines, but to enable particularly kids to be entertained while they're on lines. And what you mentioned at Disney World for the Winnie the Pooh attraction is a great example of that. So I'm only going to say more to come, if you'll just trust us on that one.
I don't know, have you seen American Idol? I think that's another really good example of using the time enjoyably while you're waiting outside and you get to see the groups and figure out who you're going to root for. But this is a major project. I won't get into any of the details, I promise. I probably don't know many. But this is a really major project, and I think would be viewed by everybody in the parks. It's probably the most significant thing we can do in the years ahead. It's costing a lot of money, but it's going to be worth it, we think. Yeah, let's see. I don't think I've been to two for a while. Two? Four? Four? Okay, thank you for keeping me on track down there. It's very good. Four?
Probably didn't want to come back here. My name's Tom Brooks. I'm here from Salt Lake City, and we are stockholders since 81. I'm in the local Disney club here in Salt Lake. Our president is here, and lots of members. I see Dave Bird, who's a great Disney artist, is here, and Barnes, and Carrie, and Mike over here. Anyway, so we all really appreciate Disney, and because we don't get enough chances to go to the park, and we have to have our fix, so we have our club, and we put on tons of events, and lots of Disney people have come up and been guests for us, and it's been really enjoyable. And what I wanted to say is just how much Bob Iger, you mean to this company, and what you've been doing. I mean, it starts at the top. And having gone to the D23 Expo and heard your comments and just your involvement, I mean, you truly love the company, and it shows. And I think that trickles all the way down, that it's infectious. And if I had a wish, I guess, for Disney, it would be that, every employee would, take on what you have in your heart for the company. And I guess another wish would be maybe that we'd lose that Disney, every department, kind of like fighting for itself and having to try to be profitable and just have a synergy for the whole company instead of just an individual. I think that that's really hurting the company and not what Walt wanted, and I think your predecessor did that, and it probably is, I think, pretty damaging. But anyway, we love you very, very much.
Thank you.
Very nice. Thank you.
Thanks for coming to Salt Lake City.
Thank you. Thanks for your compliments. I appreciate it. I think the passion that I have for the company and my interest in it is shared by a number of people who are in this room who are cast members of the company and the plus 100,000 cast members around the world, which were in my comments earlier. I'm just one of them, by the way. I don't really detect it as an issue in terms of internecine warfare or battles between our different businesses. There is a huge amount of pride in individuals for the businesses that they work in, but we've worked really hard over the last number of years to have people at all levels of the company thinking about the whole instead of just the individual parts. And even though you have to concentrate on the job at hand or the business at hand to make it great, I think we've done a great job as a company of putting it all together as one. And not only showing respect, but having a rooting interest in the success of all the other businesses. I appreciate your criticism, but it's not something that I believe is a problem at the company today.
I'll just say, as a member of the board, it has been really striking to all of us how this company has come together across the business units under Bob's leadership. This is a great team, and it's manifested itself in the transfer of things like that come from Pixar into every part of the business, cars, consumer goods. It's translated into really tremendous progress for the business. Hey, I've got a good note here that was just handed to me that I want to read to you. This will ensure you leave in a very careful way. As shareholders leave the auditorium, they will have an opportunity to provide the information we need to send them the Disneyland tickets. Cast members will be outside to assist you. Now, don't rush out right now. They will stay there. We will be leaving in due course, but you'll remember that, I know. Okay, let me go here to number one. Yes.
My name is James Hansen. I'm from the Salt Lake City area, and appreciate the opportunity to be here today as a shareholder. Bob touched a little bit earlier on the fact that you're in Salt Lake City this year, and I was wondering if you could expand a little bit on what goes into location selection for the annual shareholder meeting, and maybe a little bit more about why Salt Lake City was chosen this year, and if you could speak at all, maybe you have data, maybe you don't, as to how important the Utah market is to the company as a whole, either in the parks realm or other aspects of the company. Thanks.
Well, we typically look for a city where we've planted a flag in some form or another. We know that we've got a Disney store presence here. We hope to bring, by the way, the new Disney store design to this market at some point soon. We also know there are a number of shareholders that live in this area, representing well over 100,000 shares of the company. Obviously, it's a market that we know enjoys our television shows, our channels, our movies. And ESPN does a fair amount of business in Utah, thanks to your sports teams, both on the college and the professional level. So, nice place to visit give you a little bit of a show and a taste of what the company is about and who we are, and give you a chance to speak your mind to us. We like feedback from a diversity of people and opinions, and so it was Utah and Salt Lake City this year. There isn't that much more science that goes into it. And I don't know whether there's a second part of your question. Was that?
That was basically it.
Number four, please.
Also, there's also Disney Radio here.
Thank you.
They're helping us. My name is Dwight Morgan. I'm a shareholder, and I'm also a charter member of D23. And I also was proud to get the first Premier Passport in California. And I didn't get to San Antonio to hear you announce that, but therefore I was in California to get there the next morning and get it. I was very happy last week to find out that they can now scan my card for my discounts. It only took them a year to get to that, after it took them 4 days to make it work to get into the park. And with that, I have another challenge for you. As a company, we're being ripped off again in California, and again because of IT. There are people who buy multi-day park hopper passes and then rent them on Craigslist and other social media. And they're undetectable because there's no ID that goes with that park hopper pass. Now, Florida has a biometric that gets registered with that. So I challenge you to bring biometrics to the parks in California. And then I have another one. I take people to Disneyland because they think I know a lot. Actually, it's just I have fun showing them around, and they don't get there as often as I do, so I know the good places to go. But recently I took some friends who are diabetic, and their whole family is diabetic. Their big concern was that those sugar-free items are available. They are not readily noticed. And while adults don't mind asking, the adolescents have a stigma associated with it. And so their concern is, why don't the restaurants have those things out where they, along with the other condiments, where they can be seen, where they can be picked up without having to be a special request? Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, both points are good ones. I must admit, I'm not familiar with the lack of biometrics in California, but we'll look into that. On the second part of your question or comment, we've worked really hard to make available to people at our parks all kinds of different food that deal with food allergies, which is a growing issue in this country and in this world, and to deal with medical issues like diabetes. I will look into to what extent we make them available without having to ask for them. I know that they're readily available. I just don't know how active or interactive the guest has to be in order to get it. I will look into that.
Okay, and I have one other thing that came up while I was standing here in line. For all of the shareholders here, I know the union issue gets to be a big issue with other shareholders that aren't involved in it. I have been a union spokesperson at other shareholders' meetings. Sometimes that's the only way that the board gets the story. They get the story coming up through the management ranks, but it gets filtered. It gets filtered heavily. Sometimes the only way to get it to the top is to bring it here. Just as nobody knew about the request for a nationwide passport until I brought it here 2 years ago, 3 years ago. And yet I know that there were people in the park that tried to pass that word up the line. It just never got here. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Good. Good example. We'll go to number one and then number two. Number one.
Hi, I'm Charlie Carno, and I'm with Unite Here. Today you've heard a lot about Disney's efforts to take away the health care benefits of our members at Disneyland, and I want to thank the gentleman who just spoke for his kind remarks. I want to mention another example of how Disney's management is disrespecting its workforce. For the last 2 months, Disneyland workers have asked management to stop a practice of exposing them to identity theft by encoding their Social Security numbers on their ID cards. The employees' Social Security numbers and other private information can be seen on their ID cards using most cell phones, including the Apple iPhone and those running the Android operating system. And it's easily retrievable with any smartphone barcode scanner app. We believe that this is both reckless and illegal. It violates California Civil Code 1798.85, a law that bars entities from printing an individual's Social Security number on any card required for the individual to access products or services offered by the entity. That might include things like a discount that workers might receive when scanning their ID at a location. We are aware that many other Disney employees outside of Disneyland face the same issue. Last month, the Los Angeles County Federation of Labor, which represents 350 unions representing 800,000 workers, took a position urging Disney to end the practice. And I understand that yesterday there was a delegation of workers at the Disneyland hotels to management presenting a petition of 1,400 signatures asking Disney to end the practice. Can you discuss how Disney plans to address this issue across the company? And thank you so much for taking the question.
Yes, I can discuss it. When we started using Social Security numbers as part of employee IDs, and then we started embedding that information in barcodes on IDs for all employees, including me, by the way, the technology didn't exist, the technology that you described, to read the barcodes and glean from those barcodes sensitive personal information, information that we realize should not get into the hands of anyone that wants to use it for nefarious purposes. When we discovered that that was an issue, we notified employees across the company quickly that this was an issue and that while we were trying to remediate it, they had to be particularly careful with their IDs, not only protecting what hands the ID may get into, but how they're actually shown when they're asked to show their ID at various places. We are addressing this issue. This issue will be completely fixed. We're trying to do it as quickly as possible. There's obviously some technological issues that we're having to address, and across the thousands of employees that we have to deal with, this is not a small thing. It's a big thing. But we're taking it very seriously, and it is being addressed, and I assure you it's going to be fixed, and it'll be fixed soon.
And will that include replacing the cards?
We obviously are not going to be able to use the same system, obviously, but we're working on the solution, and it will become clear to employees as soon as we're ready to roll it out.
Thank you very much, and I also, I don't know if they've sort of been thanked yet, but this is sort of unrelated to the topic, but I just really want to thank the folks the staff members who really put this annual meeting of shareholders together. I don't know if I think the event was run very well, and I don't know if the people that work here always say.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for noting that. That's unusual and appropriate. I will go to number two.
Good afternoon. My name is Jorge Iniestra. I'm not only a shareholder, but I'm also a bellman at the Disneyland Hotel in Anaheim for over 13 years. I've been there. Before I read off of my notes, because I want to be clear and concise, there's something. I was also in San Antonio last year for the shareholders meeting, and I addressed my passion, not only my passion to work for Disney or what we feel when we work for Disney. I also mentioned that I would never work for another hotel, whether it's a Marriott or a Hilton. Not that I have anything against them. It's just that it wouldn't be the same because you don't count on the same tools to create those magical memories that can only be created when you work for Disney. And so having said that, when people say very rudely sometimes, why don't, if you're not so happy with the way or the proposals that Disney's throwing at you, why don't you just quit and find another job? Well, I don't quit and find another job first because I love my job. It's not just being a bellman. It's creating unforgettable and impacting memories on the in the guests' hearts and minds that go to our hotel. Second, we don't run from difficult situations. Having said that, I'm going to read off my notes. And it says, well, like my fellow bellman here today, I am able to be here because I'm part of a small group of Disney employees who own Disney stock, and I am able to take my time off to travel here. There are many other Disney workers who would like to be here to tell you their stories but cannot do so. Let me briefly read you statements from a few of my coworkers. One, my name is Rosario Casas, and I've been a housekeeper at the Grand Californian Hotel, Disney's Grand Californian Hotel, for 10 years. In 2008, Disney increased the workload for many housekeepers dramatically. On October 21st, 2009, I suffered a heart attack on the job. I didn't have any health problems before my heart attack, but in the workplace, we are under a lot of pressure to get our work done faster and faster. Number two, my name is Teresa de Guerra, and I have been a housekeeper for 34 years. I suffer from carpal tunnel syndrome because of the repetitive motion of housekeeping work. I have had two hand surgeries, but I have little strength in my hands, especially in my right hand. The doctors at Disney tell me that it's because of my age that my hands have no strength, but I know that's not true. It's because of the repetitive motion injuries I have suffered over the years. I'm worried that every day I lose more strength in my hands. I cannot open a bottle or hold my grandchildren. Number three, my name is Maria Navarro. I have worked at the Disney's Grand Californian Hotel as a housekeeper for more than 5 years. Because of the heavy mattress we lift to tuck in the sheets, I injured my back at work in 2008. I couldn't work for 4 months, and when I finally went back to work, I was still taking medication for pain. I work in pain regularly. We work hard, putting our bodies at risk of injury just to make enough money to scrape by. And now Disney wants us to shoulder the cost for healthcare. As a single mom with 3 children, I cannot afford it. And fourth and last one, as you may also know, workers at the Disneyland Paris, in which the Walt Disney Company holds a significant stake, have also been concerned about health and safety issues. The union representing many Disneyland Paris employees has held protests in solidarity with U.S. Disney employees, including a protest at Euro Disney's annual shareholders meeting in Paris last month. And one another thing, last year in San Antonio, when I was at the shareholders meeting, it had been a month since I personally had participated in a 9-day hunger strike. I personally did not eat anything for 7 days, and I camped out on the street in front of Disney's Grand Californian Hotel because that's how important this issue is for me, my 3 children, and my wife. And I'd like to be very clear about something that's being repeated, yet it's not been, not enough emphasis has been focusing on this part. Our health insurance is not free. We feel like we've been tried, people have tried to demonize us by saying, look at the rest of the country, it's a crisis, and the health insurance cost has gone up. It is not free. Like Russell, my partner, said, my fellow bellman, we have foregone over the years, even before you came along, Mr. Iger, raise increases, at least decent ones, in order for that money to go into our health care fund. And the reason that we don't have sick days is because those sick days would come out of that health care fund, which is bleeding to death because of Disney's refusal to put forth enough money to keep us afloat. We're not asking for stars. We're not asking for the stars. We're not asking for a CEO compensation package. We're just asking for Disney not to take away what we already have. Thank you very much. And once again, there's no other place to work better than to work for Disney. And I don't let these labor disputes infringe upon the type of guest experience that I put forth every day on the job. And I don't do it for the company. I do it for myself because that I take that passion and I take those smiles back to my home. And I talk to my family about it. I talk to my kids about it. My kids love Disney. And they tell me, once again, and I said this last year's shareholder meeting, they tell me, please, Dad, whatever you do, don't get fired because we need to keep going to Disney and because they love Disney. And thank you for listening. That is very gracious of you.
We hear you. We hear you. And I hope that response to the latest management proposal, I hope it comes back soon so these discussions can continue and hopefully get to resolution. Thank you.
John, I just want to reiterate that that proposal that we made gives union members the choice of either staying in the union plan or going to the Disney plan, which is the common plan that most Disney employees are working under. So that you can stay in that plan. We believe it's your best advantage to join our plan because we think it offers more benefits, and we're also offering you money to help defray that cost. I should also say that what we've offered is guaranteed raises as well for 5 years. So, again, we're not trying to take choice away. We've offered you choices, multiple choices to stay in the Disney plan and help defray the cost at a variety of different levels, or the choice to stay in the union plan.
Really quick, Mr. Iger, I understand that you think that your plan might be better than the one that we currently have, but when the great majority of the workers have rejected that offer, that sends out a message that we don't agree with you. And also, the fact that you're telling us that we could keep our plan, we see it as an attack on our health care plan. Now, before I keep going, and I'll stop right here, I just want to reiterate, the great majority of the workers have rejected the plan. And as much as you know and you have the business savvy that you have to run the business, sometimes you have to listen to the workers. As much as you think your plan is better, we have rejected it. And one more thing, we stand with the Wisconsin workers. Thank you.
Okay, more discussion. There is a plan on the table now to which you're going to be responding. We're going to take two more questions. We're approaching noon. Let me take number four, and I'll come back to you, sir. And maybe we'll get number one, too. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
My name is Frank D'Angelo. I drove here from Offutt Air Force Base in Nebraska.
Thank you very much.
To be here today. During the last few years, and first of all, I am a shareholder of the last couple of years now, but during the past few years, I've had the privilege of visiting the downtown Disney shopping centers in California and Florida. I got to visit Florida when Disney offered free 5-day park hopper passes for our military, and I thank you for that, back in 2009. And I noticed while I was at those two shopping centers that the shopping centers were packed with people, all kinds of customers from everywhere. And it showed me that the concept is a huge success. Disney took something that already existed, shopping center, theaters, restaurants, stores, and made it huge in Disney's style, which has always been a success. And my question is, has the company or will the company consider taking that model and applying it across the United States in markets where such a model would be a success? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are you still a member of our military?
I am, sir.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you. And I think everyone else did. Now, dating all the way back to Walt and Roy's day, the company has valued America's men and women in our armed services and have tried really hard to make it easier for them and their families to visit our various parks and to gain access to Disney product, even when they're serving on bases around the world. And we're going to continue to do that. It is a critical part of our outreach to and our citizenship to people around the world. You know, I appreciate your compliments about downtown Disneys that exist in Anaheim and Orlando. They're beautiful and they are very successful. The primary reason that they are is because of their proximity to those parks and resorts, though. We have kind of a built-in, as you'd expect, a clientele that's visiting or guests that are visiting those parks. They are popular with the local residents as well, but the primary reason that they are different in terms of their success is all the people that come visit those great parks and resorts like to visit our shopping. We have, from time to time, looked at other opportunities outside of our parks and resorts for various Disney businesses. The resort that we're building in Hawaii, the cruise ships are examples of that. We've not looked at going into the shopping center business. We actually debated hard whether we should stay in the stores business. And once we saw the new concept, which we're rolling out across the world, we decided it would be a good thing to do. But beyond that, I don't think you can expect to see a Disney shopping center near you any day soon. All right? Sorry.
I have not yet been to California Adventure, but I'm hoping that maybe your generous offer today will afford us that opportunity, maybe as an option.
You should come visit. I'm hoping now I feel a lot of pressure that the entrance is good.
Yeah, right.
It will be, I promise. Yeah. I'm going to go back and take a look at this.
Thank you
very much, sir.
Thank you for making the trip here today. Number three.
Hello, Mr. Iger, Mr. Pepper. I just want to, one, thank you for coming out to Salt Lake City. My name is Michael Reagan. I am a shareholder, and I reside here in Salt Lake. First, I want to say that when I leave here today and my friends and family ask, now that I've attended the shareholder meeting, what am I going to do next? I can now tell them I'm going to Disneyland.
Hey!
And then two just brief questions. One, I'm really impressed with the way the Walt Disney Company has adapted to new technologies in home entertainment, especially with the adaption of the new Disney second screen technology. I've experienced that, and it's amazing technology. I'm just wondering if there's a possibility to explore the option of taking some of the older company content that's been created over the years and decades and possibly bring that to a streaming technology. I know it's very costly to create a new television network, but we so enjoyed all that old Walt Disney content when it was on the air on the older Disney Channel, a lot of the content we grew up with. It'd be wonderful to see that technology being brought to, and that programming content being brought to a streaming technology that we can enjoy it in the home. And then lastly, the Shanghai Disneyland project. I'm just wondering if the concept for that would be something of a Disney park that we're used to seeing, or it'd be something totally different. Thank you.
Well, I'll answer the second part first. Shanghai Disneyland, when it's fully announced and underway, we'll have elements that are quite familiar from all other Disney parks around the world, and we'll have aspects of it that are completely original and completely new just to Shanghai Disneyland. No more details than that, but hopefully you'll get a chance to visit it one day and you'll see for yourself. The first part, new technology, is, we think, a real opportunity for this company because it gives us an opportunity not only to reach more people in new ways with our new product, but also find new ways to bring our old product that isn't readily available to them on streaming technology and a variety of other digital media technologies. Our great goal is to ultimately have a destination of sorts that people can go to and find all things Disney from the past and from the present, and even get a taste of what's coming up into the future. We're hard at work on such an experience and such a portal. Hopefully at some point soon we'll have more to say about that.
Thank you very much.
Certainly, it's certainly a possibility.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take a few more. Seeing you all stand there, I can't just leave you standing there and leave the stage. Make the questions as quick as you can, and we'll make quick answers for a few more. Number one.
Hello there. My name is Danny Christoviades. I live here in Ogden, Utah. I'm a shareholder at Disney and a charter member of D23 Club. I've loved Disney since I've been born, pretty much. I went to Disneyland for my first time when I was 3 months old and just loved the Disney company for that way. I loved about Disney editions coming out with books such as the Kingdom Keepers series and the Peter and the Starcatchers trilogy. Do you think there's a possibility of making them into like movie franchise like later in the future, or making the Kingdom Keepers like more part of the Disney World experience?
When we got the rights to Peter and the Starcatchers, which is a prequel to Peter Pan, we actually considered making a movie out of it, but we haven't made that decision yet. What we did do is that we created a stage play about Peter and the Starcatchers, which we tried out in a small theater in La Jolla, California, and we brought it to Off-Broadway in New York fairly recently. And if you go to NewYorkTimes.com and you search for Peter and the Starcatchers, within the last few weeks, it got a glowing review from one of the toughest critics out there, Ben Brantley of the New York Times. And so Peter and the Starcatchers lives in another form. I'm hoping actually to see it this Saturday night in New York myself, and who knows what happens from there. But we're proud of it and proud that it's receiving the kind of positive feedback and attention that it's getting.
Thank you.
Number four.
Thank you. My name is Terrell Nilsson. I'm from Payson, Utah, which is down south from here. First of all, Mr. Iger, Mr. Pepper, and other distinguished members of the board, thank you for bringing this meeting to Salt Lake City. As a proud grandfather of 10 grandchildren, I am a Disney stockholder. I am a Disney Vacation Club member in both California and Florida, and have been to Disneyland easily 200 times or more in my life.
Thank you.
I love Disney. Unlike other people here, though, I have yet to join D23, which I guess I'll do as I walk out.
How do we miss you? I don't.
My wife is worse than me, I'll say, but yeah. I have a three-part question. The first part is a concern. And maybe it's just me, but as I see community activities and things going on, I'm wondering what Disney is doing about controlling the propriety of their brand as people use Disney trademarks, costumes, etc., to sell their own personal gain. That's my first concern. My second concern is I've been to both Disney World and Disneyland 4 times in the last 16 months. Between the two parks, and I've noticed that the details, which Walt Disney would say is the details are what makes Disney the brand, of unpainted fences or cobwebs hanging from light posts and things, this is not what Disney was about as I was growing up. It was perfect and pristine every time. And then my last question is, and probably the one I'm most concerned about, is as I prepare to make my own memories 2 times in the coming year, 2 weeks from now, taking my mother-in-law and sister-in-laws to Disneyland, who haven't been there in 30 years, and I was there 2 months ago, so that's important to me. But my ability to gain access to my Vacation Club membership at the Grand Californian, I recognize that Disneyland in Anaheim, the Disneyland Resort, is a landlocked entity, for obvious reasons. But what is the Disney company doing to expand beyond the 50 units that are available in that resort? I do know that there is parking lot lands and stuff available to the west in Anaheim, but it's really difficult to gain a reservation as a club owner in that resort. And so my concern is that. But
on one hand, I'm sorry to hear that. On the other hand, I'm kind of glad to hear that.
Well, they're not even selling memberships in California now. Because
we made a decision to build 50 Vacation Club residents in Anaheim as part of the Grand Californian, as you suggested. They only recently opened within the last couple of years. It was a bit of an experiment because we know the Vacation Club primarily works when it's on our property in Orlando. We wanted to see how it would work in another location, and we're still assessing that before we make a commitment to put more capital into building more. We've not made that decision, although we are expanding Vacation Club both in Florida and outside of Florida. Hawaii, the project is hotel and Vacation Club. The second part of your question, or the middle, I'm actually very proud of the shape that Disneyland is in. I'm sorry to hear your criticism, but I will go back and look into it. I thought that there was a point sometime within the last decade where we were not investing enough in annual maintenance to keep Disneyland fresh and looking great, whether it was in Walt's day or whenever. And we did, in fact, increase our annual capital budget to do just that. The times that I go, and I go fairly often, and I try to look very critically, occasionally I do spot a paint ship here and or something, you know, relatively small. But I will say that the kind of collective experience and the overall shape of that whole facility, from the restaurants to the hotels to the theme park attractions, I think is top-notch. But there's always room, admittedly. It should be perfect. That's kind of hard to achieve, but we should certainly try to.
Let me add that it doesn't stop me from going, and it never
will.
But by the way, if you see something
that I notice,
if you see something, walk up to a cast member and point it out, or try to figure out a way to get it to me. I have an email address, and I don't. Sometimes there are thousands and thousands that come in. I don't see them all, but somebody does. The first part of your question, you know, protecting our intellectual property, our trademarks, our copyrights, is something that we work on very aggressively in many markets around the world. And there are different ways to look at this. There's the digital piracy side, or physical goods piracy, and there's just simple theft of trademarks and copyrights. There's so much interest in Disney around the world that there are bound to be infractions, people who create a costume that's not licensed and sell it for their own gain, et cetera, and so on. We try to do a good job at policing all of that. There's a limit that we can go to, either because of the resources that are required, or just the fact that, you know, we don't want to act like true policemen in the process. I think, by and large, we've done a good job in terms of protecting our global copyrights and trademarks, and we're working hard at trying to fight what is obviously an increasing problem with digital piracy, but I appreciate you bringing it up. I think we've got a pretty large staff that's devoted to this effort on a global basis, and I think they've been pretty effective. John?
Thank you, and thank you for the free tickets to Disneyland.
No, you're welcome. Are you together with that young man in back of you? Could I ask, could he come up here? Could you give him the mic here? Do you have something to say, young man? No, this gentleman here, you're young. Yeah, I can only take a couple more questions, and I'd love to hear from him.
I'm Ryan Colley, and I'm in fourth grade from Durango, Colorado. And my question is there going to be anything new at Disney World besides the extended Fantasyland?
Besides the extended what?
Fantasyland.
There's always something going on that's new. Fantasyland is the big project that's going on right now. You're testing me here. I have an idea of what's going on in every park around the world. To my knowledge, we haven't announced any other large-scale projects for Disney World at this point. Fantasyland is well underway. There's a significant amount of construction equipment there. It actually is the most... the Magic Kingdom is the most popular park that we have around the world, and Fantasyland is the most popular part of the Magic Kingdom. And it really hasn't been upgraded in a significant way, believe it or not, in decades. And we felt that we really needed to get that right, and we're pretty excited about it. And there are a number of other design and development plans in the works right now, but nothing that we've approved yet for other parts of that resort, and therefore nothing that we've announced.
More
there,
to come.
There will be things.
More
I
to
promise.
Come. Okay, two more. Past noon, I will take young lady at number two, and then I'm going to come back to number three. We're going to need to wrap it up then.
Okay, I'm going to wrap it on a positive note. I'm a retired grandmother from Bristol, Connecticut, home of ESPN, and I'm also a retired ESPN employee. And every year we come to the convention, wherever you are, and I always like to reiterate how ESPN has grown and expanded under Disney care. ESPN2, ESPN the magazine, ESPN Classic, and I won't go on because my D23 watch tells me I will go over time. And thank you so much for what you've done. And ESPN, I just want to reiterate one other thing. ESPN does a lot of community work as well. They do mentoring programs. They give a lot to the local museums and a lot to local education. Thank you.
Thank you for that. We're very proud of ESPN. Thank you. Yes, sir.
My name is Matthew Hansen. I'm a shareholder from here locally. This year is... large anniversary for one of Disney's classic films. Disney Restoration Team Artistic Supervisor Dave Bossert recently said that there's been a lot of internal discussion about it, and at some point we're going to do something about it. I don't know when, but we will. We want people to see it because we realize it's a big piece of company history, and we want to do it the right way. With this year being the 65th anniversary of Song of the South, I was wondering when we might see that.
I thought you almost got through the meeting.
I thought you were going to say it's the 60th anniversary of Peter Pan. I was kind of hoping for that. I said last year at our shareholders meeting that I had watched Song of the South again, and even though we've considered from time to time bringing it back, I didn't think it was the right thing for the company to do. It was made at a different time. Admittedly, you could use that as context, but I just felt that there are elements to the film, while it was a relatively good film, that wouldn't necessarily sit right or feel right to a number of people today, and just felt that it wouldn't be in the best interest of our shareholders to bring it back. Even though there'd be some financial gain, sometimes you make sacrifices on the financial side to do what you believe is right, and that's an example of that.
Would it be possible to have kind of how they have the Disney exclusive videos that aren't available in stores?
I just don't feel that it's right for us to use company resources to make it available, whether it's wide or whether it's narrowly available. Just a strong belief that I have, consulted with other top executives of the company. They all agreed, and I think just remember it as it was and don't expect to see it again for at least for a while, if ever.
Thank you. And in closing, I just wanted to ask also when Tron 3 might get a green light to move ahead.
Don't know.
Thank you, sir. Well, that wraps up the meeting today in the Q&A session. You've been a great audience, and I hope you did enjoy the meeting. The points of concern that were brought up, I can assure you, are noted. As a board member, I can't tell you how thrilling it is to hear the support for this company and the caring for it that so many of you have expressed here. Obviously, that's earned by the people who are doing the work every day, but it's great, and I thank you for expressing it. Thank you for coming here. You've broken new ground in the meeting today. I don't know if it's a precedent or not, but I do agree with Bob. I think Walt would have come to the same conclusion. Have them come to Disneyland. Have a great rest of the day, and thanks
for coming. Thank you, everyone. Yeah.